learn how you can make a greater impact for this country. Reserve your seats before the end of the year and get in for half off. Make plans now to attend the Western Conservative Conference March 23rd in Phoenix with half-price seating through the end of the year at westernconservative.org. That's westernconservative.org.
Russian President Vladimir Putin offers kudos to the United States and President Trump. USA Radio Network's Washington correspondent Doug Christian has the details.
Russian President Vladimir Putin thanked U.S. President Donald Trump on Sunday for the CIA alerting Putin to an imminent terrorist bomb plot to attack St. Petersburg, according to Moscow officials. In rare words of praise for the CIA, the Kremlin said in a statement posted on its website that the CIA provided information that, quote, helped detain terrorists planning explosions. The plot was to strike crowded areas, including Kazan Cathedral, the statement said. Doug Christian, Washington.
As we approach Christmas, many people wonder, what is the right amount to tip a hairdresser or maybe your mailman or your UPS driver? Well, Valerie Sikofsky is author of the book Do It Right, a new business book on etiquette. She discusses who should be tipped and the amount that they should be tipped.
The general rule for that is if you are going, let's say, to a hairdresser, and for us, Carly, maybe it's $100 for a haircut, whatever, then that same amount would be a good bonus tip. In other words, a service amount for someone that is serving you regularly.
And finally, rap star Sean Diddy Combs said he's interested in buying the NFL's Carolina Panthers. This after Jerry Richardson said over the weekend he plans to sell the team soon. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hi, I'm Sharon Skibbe of CompuPay Payroll. The Chamber is a great way to connect to other businesses within Hunterdon County and build strong and lasting business relationships.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Weather this afternoon, partly sunny with a high near 47, west wind around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 32, west wind 5 to 8 miles per hour. Tuesday, partly sunny with a high near 52, west wind 7 to 11 miles per hour. Tuesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 36, west wind 7 to 9 miles per hour. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 41, northwest wind 8 to 11 miles per hour with gusts as high as 21 miles per hour. Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 24.
Help make your community safer. Hunterdon County Crime Stoppers is a community-based program aimed at making our community safer by providing an avenue for citizens to anonymously report criminal activity. It provides monetary rewards if the information leads to an arrest and indictment. See something, say something, and get cash for your anonymous tip. Call or text 1-800-321-0010 or go online to www.crimestoppershunterdon.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff. We work out of our houses, and as people have told me, that makes the traffic jam a lot easier going from the kitchen to the living room. But anyway, what we try to do is we try to help people who either have someone in their family or someone they know or work with or next door neighbor who has a mental illness, or the person themselves who have a mental illness, get the right services that they need. And we do that in various ways. We teach what they call a family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course which covers everything from medications, side effects, what to do, what not to do, what to say, what not to say in certain circumstances. We also have what they call a basics course, which is for families who have children who have mental health issues under the age of 18, and that's a 6-week course. All our courses, regardless of what it is totally free. We don't charge for anything. All the material is free and everything. We also run what they call a support group once a month, the third Thursday of every month. We hold it at 52 East Main Street in Flemington, and everything is confidential, and people can talk, and they may have someone there that has gone through what they're going through or are going through the same thing at the same time, and they throw out things that they tried or that didn't work or that may work for someone else and whatever. If you have any questions or need some more information about some of the classes that we have, you can reach out at 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. Today we are very privileged to have with us a group of women. I'm the only guy in the room, and there's five women in it. You know? And they're from the Good News Home for Women. We have Nancy, is it Wilkes?
Just K, W-I-L-K. W-I-L-K.
Wilk, oh, okay, I'm sorry, who's a family counselor. We have Debbie Long, who is now a spiritual counselor, but used to be a licensed clinical social worker and all that other letters that I don't have any idea what they all stand for, you know, behind their name, you know. And we also have Colleen Alio, okay, who is a resident at Good News Home. And I want to thank you all for coming out today. I'm glad that you could take time out at the last minute, because there was some confusion as to the day, to be with us and come and speak with us. First of all, it doesn't matter who answers it, anybody can answer it. What exactly, for those that don't know, is Good News Home for Women, and who does it serve? I know it's for women, but what issues does it focus on?
I'll speak first. The Good News Home for Women is a residential treatment program centered with women with chemical dependencies and co-occurring disorders. And we are long-term, short-term beds. We've been there. We just celebrated our 30th anniversary in October of this year. And there's a lot of good stories of how the Good News Home got started. And there was founded by a woman by the name of Tracy Ginsburg. And we believe an angel led her to find us at the Good News Home, to find our location, and she started that. She used to be a Las Vegas showgirl years ago. And she picked up a hitchhiker one day, and she got recovery because she got on the fast track of life, and she got off the track, and she was looking for a place for women to go to for a spiritual place and for some recovery, and she picked up a hitchhiker. She never picked up hitchhikers, but she did that day, and the hitchhiker directed her to where we are now located on 33 Bartles Corner Road. And he told her, you might want to check that place out, and it turned out to be the place. And we are very fortunate to be there the way we have that building right now. And as she turned around to look, the man was gone, so we just always feel that it might have been our angel that directed us.
Yeah, yes. It's interesting.
Yes.
I know that the youth at our church had done some things over there recently, shelving or something that they put in. I can't remember what exactly. But
I think you sent painters maybe over too.
That's possible, yes. Yes,
because yeah. Yes, my office got painted.
Okay. That's not my thing.
I
hire painters to come in because I'm terrible at painting, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you said some of the clients have dual diagnosis, mm-hmm. You talking about a mental health issue and an addiction or either drug or alcohol?
Combo.
Yes, many of our clients do have mental health issues such as bipolar, depression, anxiety. So we have people who we take them to Hunterton Behavioral Health Services so that they can get treatment for both their addictions and their mental health.
I know that many years of being in NAMI and talking to, I can't even begin to count how many people, but a lot of them have told me that the reason that they started alcohol or drugs was to take the pain away from the mental part, the mental issue part. And then it got to be, you know, a dual thing where they still had the mental part, but now they were drinking or doing drugs or whatever. And, you know, and I find that, you know, I can understand that. I really can. I have a son who's paranoid schizophrenia, so I know about it. We were fortunate that he only dabbled a little bit in alcohol and then stopped. But he was hospitalized for almost 3 years in a state hospital in Trenton and Hagedorn when they were here. Mm-hmm. So, and had three continuous years, not breaks. So, you know, but anyway.
One of the things that is important that research studies have shown is that when you have a person who's dual diagnosed, both with a substance abuse disorder and with a mental health problem, treatment results are better when you treat both problems simultaneously and when the treatment is either under the same providers or really, really coordinated between providers. So that's why we think that it's important to address both sides of the disease.
Do you find that it's difficult to get one provider to do both?
Well, people have to be highly trained. But now, like, I know that Rutgers offers courses where people are trained simultaneously in substance abuse and mental health.
Right.
We have a variety. Like, I have an LCADC, which is a substance abuse license, and I also have been cross-trained and have an LSW, which is a mental health license. So I've been cross-trained and have an intermediate mental health license as well as a substance abuse license.
Well, I've had 20 years with my son, so I don't have a lot of letters after my name, but, you know, living with the experience, it's been, you know.
Absolutely. You have the practical experience.
Right, exactly. And
so you talk about treating these both together. Does one usually get, I'll use the word, fixed first, or how does that usually work?
Typically, when the first 28 days or the blackout period, when a woman enters treatment, and during that period of time, the person, they're not allowed phone calls or any outside mail, but it gives the clinical staff a chance to ascertain if there's any problems that will surface once they get clean and sober. And recovery, early recovery, signs are showing that is usually up to 2 to 3 years. So when you're talking about 28 days, it's barely time to get the substances cleared out, and then by then you start to see different over a period of time. And I am a firm believer in long-term treatment. I think these 28-day programs do not work.
Right. I agree with you.
My daughter, if I may say, went to a program in Blairstown called Alina Lodge, and their whole criteria is a minimum of 12 months and then followed up by a program of a halfway house. And everybody, and it's male and females go there. It's probably one of the premier facilities in the country. I know we're here to talk about the Good News Home, but long-term treatment is what I'm getting at.
Right.
Because then in that period of time, you can begin to understand and diagnose these conditions as they start to surface. It takes a moment in time for this to happen.
In addition, we have both group and individual counseling. So in the group counseling, we will concentrate on the substance abuse part of the treatment. But in the individual counseling, we get to address individual needs, which could be mental health needs if a person is dual diagnosed. So usually, as a clinician, I'll wait until after the first 28 days, because usually a person may come in detoxing, and we want to let them get the fog cleared out of their head.
Right, right.
But after that, if a person has a dual diagnosis, I'll begin working individually with them on those issues that they need to address.
We have a full program at the Good News Home. By state mandates, we are required to have 37.5 hours of education a week. And during that period of time, we do have a lot of classes that are taught on addiction. And I know, Colleen, you could probably talk a little bit more. Why don't you tell us some of the classes that you have right now?
I took computer classes, two computer classes since I've been there. I took an empowerment class. I also did volunteer work and for a couple of months, and I've been there for 9 months. I plan on being there for a year or more. They're training me to lead a sober life and, you know, learn how to live a sober life. And with our classes, our spiritual classes with Debbie and our other classes. You need to talk about that. It's unbelievable. I can't even, you know, it's great. You know, all of our classes that we do, the geogram classes that we do to find out different parts of it. It goes, you know, it's a disease. I'm an alcoholic, you know, it's a disease, and we learn more about it, and we go back, you know, to our families, and we learn about, you know, what part of, like, my father or my mother's side, and, you know, we put it all together and kind of figure it all out, which is really good. We do that in class with my counselor, Tara, who is a great counselor also. She teaches some classes, and Dana also does the geogram with us, and
I got to ask, Colleen, how did you get there?
How did I get there? I was in very bad shape. I can't even tell you. It's pretty much to the end of my ropes. And my sisters were very concerned. And my Aunt Mary is a nurse, and she knows a little bit about this field. And she has friends, so mm-hmm. She had called a friend and said, you know, I got to get my niece into a long term, because I did do a 28 day one, right. And on my way home from the 28 days, I picked up a thing of wine. So I mean, it really didn't do anything for me. But I came in. So my aunt found it. My sister called me. You know, she's just like, listen, you need to think about this, and you need to make a decision, and you need to make it today. So I called her back in 5 minutes, and I said, I'm going. She gave me the number. I called. I had to go through a phone screen, mm-hmm. which was great. And then I had a face-to-face within right. a week. And I drove here, and I was a nervous wreck because, first of all, I had to get the alcohol out of me in order to drive. So I was even worse than
right.
– I would have been better off if I was drinking. But I got there and I just fell apart. I just said, I surrender. Mrs. Ernestine was there. Tara was there. Dana was there. And, Tara pulled me into the room and asked me one question. What am I willing to do to get sober? And I said, anything. I surrender. And, mm-hmm. They took me to the hospital, went to the hospital for a week, came home, and I have 9 months.
Right.
And like I said, I went through a bunch of classes, and I'm continuing to learn. After the new year, I plan on doing a step down I don't want to go home right away. So okay. In Flemington, they have what you call three-quarter houses.
Right. Right.
So in January, Tara and I are going to start looking at the three-quarter house, and you know, put my name on a list because
right.
usually it's waiting.
Usually
list.
A waiting list, right?
So, and then in the meantime, I need to find a job, and they have the link bus that mm-hmm. goes around,
right.
so I have to figure out you know getting to and from work, and just starting.
You still
to get,
drive?
Of course, yeah. I didn't lose my license or anything.
Okay.
I don't have a car. I turn my car in.
Okay.
But I'm okay, you know, right now because I'll be right here in town.
Right.
Learning about the link. I never did. You know, I've never been on it before. But
well, my son uses it all the time. So because he's been epileptic since he's five, so he doesn't have a license. You know, he had one, but he doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah,
so.
He can't drive. Yeah. They say it's wonderful, whatever. It does, you know, I'm taking baby steps.
Sure.
And
absolutely.
Getting back into, my life. And I like to stay around here. There's a lot of sobriety here. I have the Good News Home that if I really need to go back and say hello or go, you know, for
mm-hmm.
a day,
right.
if I'm not feeling good, you know, they have their arms open for me. You know, I could sit in a classroom with them. You know, if
right.
I needed to.
Right.
And so March will be a year. So hopefully by March I'll have everything done that I plan on it.
Right.
And if God, you know, if that's his plan also, we don't know what his plan really is. But that's what I'm hoping for. And
well, you know, the thing is, too, that I used to smoke. And I mean, pack and a half, 2 packs a day. And I can't tell you how many times I quit. Every New Year's Eve, I quit. Every New Year's Day, I'd start again.
Uh-huh.
They put me on a hospital thing, turned me upside down, so my head was facing the floor. They scraped my vocal cords and told me it was the only time they could do it. The next time, they would take them out. My big mouth, that wasn't going to happen. So I quit. But my point being, even today, and that was 28 years ago that I quit, even today, if someone is near me and they light up a Marlboro, I have to walk away because
wow.
that's what I smoked. And I know me. I have addictive personality. I'd be back to smoking in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I have to walk away. I know that there's things you'll have to do differently than what you did previously because you can fall off the wagon.
Well, they say people, places, and things.
Right.
You know, so I'm from the shore. I'm about an hour and 15 minutes away from my sisters and my family, which is not that big
right.
of a deal.
Right.
And my kids are in college. So being here, this is the place that I'm changing. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's the place I need to be here. I need to be around sober people. There's a lot of good meetings around here. I know them all. I'm
right.
familiar with people's faces that I could go in and feel like I'm at home. You know,
right.
I don't have to.
Right.
I don't have to start a new network. You know, right when I leave the Good News Home, which is another big, another big thing, because I'll be just walking into the same thing that I've been doing for the last year here.
Well, let me ask you a quick question, Colleen, and I will get back to the other two ladies here.
Okay.
How does the behavior of someone like yourself affect the family, affect the kids, affect the sisters, the brothers, whatever?
That is a big thing. You know, when you're drinking, you don't think that you're hurting anybody but yourself. You get sober and you realize how many people you hurt. Nancy's program is for them to come visit us. They have to go through a family program. My sister's the first one they went to. When they came to visit me, were overwhelmed, could not believe what I went through, you know, because she talks about the disease and, you know, things that, you know, they don't know, you know, and I can't explain it to them. And so family needs to be educated. My daughter goes to Allentine and Al-Anon when she
mm-hmm.
was younger.
Right.
And so she knows about the disease, and, you know, she's very supportive. She, you know, her and my two sisters are my cheerleaders. And both of my sisters, you know, like the first time they went to Nancy's program and came to see me, they were crying. And my one sister said, you know what, Colleen? She said, I didn't know what you were going through. And, you know, I can put my head on the pillow tonight and go to sleep without being interrupted. And kind of crushed me, you know, because like I said, when you're drinking, you're not thinking about it. You're thinking, you're only hurting yourself.
Right.
You realize how it dribbles right out to your family.
Nancy or Debbie, either one, would you address addictive disorders and the roles it plays with the addicts?
Well, an addictive disorder is a chronic, progressive, incurable, and often fatal disease that leads to a loss of control over a substance. And when you're out there on the streets, you step on your values a lot. You know, you might steal from your parents, or you might end up in prostitution, or you might end up doing things that go against your values. And so a lot of times when the women come in, they're carrying around a lot of guilt and shame, and they have really low self-images, and that's something that we try to address in treatment. And also when you're out there on the streets, you might experience a lot of trauma, either physical abuse, sexual abuse, stuff like that. And there's an excellent program called SAFE that we send our women to who need that kind of additional treatment. And I don't know if I answered your question or not.
You did, yeah. Nancy, what does a family counselor do, per se, in general?
You know? I am the program facilitator, and when Ernestine asked me, I've been with the Good News Home for going on 14 years in February, she asked me to write a program, and I did three parts, and I'll tell you what they all are in a minute. And then a short while afterwards, she told me to increase it to five, and then we ended up to seven. And as I go through it, but I can quickly tell you, and based on...
You're going to make it up to 10?
the need is there. The need is there for education.
No, I'm only kidding.
And I told Ernestine when we were doing this together that unless we made this mandatory for the families, they would not want to attend, because the families did not, they're in denial. Denial, depression, dependency is a part of what families go through. And unless we made it mandatory, they would not be there. So they have to come through, they take the classes, and I've seen the most resistant people walking through those doors. They will sit there and their body language just gives them away. It's like, I don't need to be here, I've heard it, done it. And then slowly they start to listen and get educated, because once you know better, you do better. Education is the key, I believe, for everything. And the programs that I wrote, basically, part one is called The Family and Recovery, and part two is on codependency, because families tend to be enablers going through this process.
Yeah.
They say for every addict alcoholic, there are four to five enablers that keep them going. Part three is the hardest class I teach. That is on relapse and relapse prevention, because I have to tell family members that there are no guarantees when their loved ones leave our program that they will remain clean and sober, because it doesn't always work out that way. We've lost a lot of women through the years that die in their addiction.
Right.
And then the only part four is on enabling and boundaries. And this is the only one that I actually do twice, and it's a takeoff on the part two, because family members are big enablers. They want to fix it. They think that, and they have it in their power to fix it, and they can financially take care of it, and they do it in the short term because it relieves their anxiety. But in the long term, you have to stop and ask yourself, is this helping or hindering the
situation?
Trust
me, they do the same thing with mental illness.
Well, it's all connected.
It's all connected.
It's
they
all
do exactly
connected.
The same thing.
Exactly. So you have to stop family members just a little. And I know I'm a recovering codependent myself. I could sit here today. I don't know how many audiences this is reaching today, but I've had my own journey, so I know what this is about. Part five is on the power of prayer, because I do believe in the spiritual component of recovery for families too. They have to be able to walk this walk. And then part six is on recovering forgiveness, because there's so many resentments that family members hold on to of the damage. And there's been a path of destruction that usually follows addictive behaviors. And so we have to learn how to separate that out. And then the last part that I teach is the 12 steps of Al-Anon and AA and NA, and what the support groups are out there so that people can get help for themselves.
Right, right. It just... would you speak, or whoever, doesn't matter who, one of you speak to the denial to addiction? Because that's, you know, we see it so much with mental illness, whether it's families or the individual themselves. There's nothing wrong with me. You're the one that's sick, you know, that sort of thing.
Denial, depression, dependency, we all cycle in and out of it. The addicts and alcoholics cycle into it, and so do family members. We call it walking with the elephant in the living room. You know, we walk around the issues that are so big instead of addressing them, you know, because we don't want to face them. They are so hard to look at. They're so painful in the end of the day. And so rather than just dealing with it, we walk around it, and it's we don't want to touch it.
Right.
Until life pushes us in the direction to want to have to deal with it, and then we look at it. But in the family program, I've seen so much healing. It's very encouraging for me to see. I've seen scores of people through the years that I've been doing this come through. And once you start to get healing with the families, then it starts to heal as a unit for everybody. And it changes up. You know, it changes the whole scenario up. And so it's basically a very good support system. A lot of tears are going around the table, especially men, because they feel they've had to be the protectors in the family. They've had to take care of their daughters and their wives, and when they can't, and it's out of their control. Powerlessness is the one thing I would say with this whole thing. An addict alcoholic on step one of the 12 steps of the program says they are powerless over their drug of choice. We as family members are powerless over the person, the addict alcoholic.
Right.
And once we can wrap our heads around that, magic starts to happen.
Yes, I agree that it denial does run on both sides, with the addict and with the family members. You might hear an addict say, well, you know, I can't use heroin anymore, but alcohol is okay. Or I can't drink anymore, but maybe just a little pot is okay. And I want to say that, you know, if you're not taking, if you're using pot, you're still not facing life on life's terms. And you're not going to be able to grow emotionally, you know. So you might say, well, what about medical reasons? Well, yeah, there are some medical things with pot, but what medical reason are you using for?
Right.
Let's backtrack for just a minute. Where do you get most of your clients? Are there any walk-ins? Are they doctor referrals or other rehab
all
facilities
the
or what?
Above, and I have to say probably the most that we get is from family members looking for help for their loved ones. The families will usually be the first ones because of their uncomfortability with what's going on in their families. Occasionally we might have one of the actual people, the alcoholic addicts, looking, but not too often. They'll go online, typically online, and they'll find our facility. And then in the jail systems, our name is out there. We get quite a few referrals from the county jails, even the prison systems, and we go to interview in those systems, and we see the compatibility if our program is a fit for them. So, and we do all the interviewing while they're still incarcerated.
Yeah, Hunterdon County has a I don't know what you call it, a system or whatever, for lack of better words, that they try to not put people in jail. Mm-hmm. If they can help them other ways, or if there's organizations that can help them.
Jail does not help
end
of the day. It's only warehousing people. We got to find different ways to do this.
And we have a couple of girls that the judge ordered them to go to a rehab instead, until their court date comes up, or, you know, they have to do like 3 months or six months with Good News Home, and then like 3 months in jail or something like that. But they send them to us. We had a few.
Yeah. Some serious ones, too.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. They will be spending time in prison. Even we have sometimes women come in that have DWIs. We had homicides as a result of DWI. You know, they'll be spending hard time, but at least the judge, when they look at them doing treatment in between that, it goes a long way.
Sure, sure. What is the procedure if someone comes to Good News? Like, you know, you were saying you had an interview, and what is the formal quote-unquote procedure for that?
Well, we have an intake person named Angela, and she does all of those things. The first is a telephone questionnaire that people who want to come into our facility need to answer, and a lot of times parents will call and will ask to speak to the individual client. So we want to know if the client is willing to come. We tell them a little bit about our facility, and then they have to do a face-to-face interview with our intake, Angela, and also a face-to-face interview with our nurse, Sheila. And I don't really do the intake. It's been a while since I've done intake, so.
And we also have a Dr. Alugo on staff who also sees the criteria before anybody gets admitted. After Angela and Sheila, our nurse, and whoever the nurses are at the time, they go over that with Dr. Alugo, and we make sure that it's a fit for everybody because we can't take everybody.
And we also use the ASAM criteria as a guide. So anybody who comes into our program has to fit into a 3.5 treatment facility, and that's defined through the ASAM criteria.
Could you explain that just a little bit more? It's what are you talking about?
Okay. So ASAM is the American Medical Addiction Society, I think. And there's all levels of different treatment. There are some short-term inpatient. There's some long-term inpatient. There's medically monitored inpatient. And then there's the outpatient and the halfway houses and the three-quarter houses. And the people that we get are people who the addiction has brought them to a place where they can't work anymore. The addiction has brought them to a place where they need at least three months and a lot of times longer than that. So we get people that we get a lot of co-occurring disorders. So we get people who the addiction has really taken down.
And they're usually still in full-blown addiction when you get them?
Yeah, a lot of times people come in detoxing, and we have to send them back to the detox units before we can take them in.
Oh, okay.
Because we do screenings when they come in. They have to have their urine specimens, and we can tell what kind of substances they are on.
Mm-hmm. And we also have our house. We have a house mom. There's somebody there 24 hours a day also to give us our medication. And to, keep, there's somebody that's an overnighter that's there in case we get up and we need anything or somebody, is in distress or anything like that.
So you usually have a roommate?
Yes, there's four to a room.
Oh,
we have two bunk beds and two regular beds on the floor. And my room is filled right now. So it's, but it's nice, enough room for everybody.
No, and range of ages, too?
I am
18 all the way up to, I think, almost
70. I am 55, so I am the oldest there. So
you
I don't
look
know
the
if
youngest, it, though.
Thank,
you know?
Thank you, but I mean, I don't know if anybody older ever came through or not, but we have a lot of 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds.
I always say the most treatment takes place when all the women have to bunk together, because we can teach them all these classes. We take them to doctor's appointments. We take them out to wherever they need to go. But the real recovery takes shape when they have to learn to live on life's terms with each other. And I always say it's like a pajama party that's done. You want to go home now. It's like, I've had my weekend. Let me out of here. And then, of course, they have to learn how to make
it
work.
You don't get to choose your...
No. You got to just make it work. And pretty much everybody... Like I said, I've been there 9 months. I have not had one problem with any. I've had roommates in and out the whole time. I've been in the same room, and I've seen them come and I've seen them go, and everything goes smoothly as long as they, go underneath what the rules of that I put out.
Yeah.
I give them the rules when they walk in. Here's your rule book. This is my room. Not you. No, I'm just kidding.
And Mother Teresa.
Hey, it works.
Yeah, and sometimes even the clinical staff will mix up we'll put certain people together because we think it's therapeutic and they can learn from one another.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I know that bonds of trust can be broken. And I know that it's... I know from NAMI that they can be healed. It's very difficult. Would you agree that the same thing happens in Good News Home?
Definitely. Colleen, speak to me about your family, the healing that's taking place.
There's a lot of healing taking place between my daughter and myself, because I have promised her before that I wouldn't drink, and, I went back out. So that's a work in progress. I talk to her every once a week, and she's very proud of me, and things are healing. My sisters are also my big cheerleaders too. We're all healing, and it's going to take a while, but everything right now is going great for me.
Okay, that's wonderful.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it has to do with not only me being honest about things and talking to them about honesty, of them going through this family program and understanding a lot more about the disease.
Well, that's
and they have to drive
true.
For an hour or something just to come to the program. So that's a commitment right there.
Right, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would you speak to some of the family program successes?
How do you define success?
How do you define success?
How do I define success?
Or how does Good News Home define
statistically, I don't
success.
Know how we follow up on that. I'm not sure. We'd have to ask our program development person on that, how she does that, our administrators upstairs there. But from my point of view, from the years I've been doing this, when families can get reunited and all of the... judgment is taken out of the addiction,
right.
The shame, the guilt, and the remorse can be removed, then the beauty part starts to set up, and then we can see the healings that take place, because families have been through a lot. I believe there's a lot of PTSD involved with this whole field. I believe when I see family members, the post-traumatic stress disorder syndromes, I think that has affected people that badly, because it's there, and the pain is there. And so when you can start to touch some of that, and just by people coming, I teach and I supply a lot of materials to these classes, but the real magic happens amongst each other. I just facilitate it, and they listen to each other's stories.
Right.
And their stories is what they'll think, well, I'm not alone. Somebody else is going through this, the support of it.
That's what I said about our support groups. It's the same thing,
mm-hmm.
That people can listen and they hear other people, what they've gone through or what helped them and what was successful for them may be successful for the other person.
I took the NAMI's 3-month program, so I know, Larry, what you're talking about.
Right.
That was
right.
A very intense program, I might add.
Yeah.
But I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good.
Now, when you're preparing someone to leave, how involved do you get with employment and how much training, or is that something they have to deal with after they're out?
Colleen, why don't you address that?
I'm getting ready to step down. My counselor's helping me a lot. different programs. Northwest CAP has, that's where I did volunteer work, and that's where I did my computer classes. And so now I'm going to be talking to another lady that's going to help me find a job. And so my counselor and I will set up an appointment for that. Tara will also, you know, like I said, take me to the three-quarter house. We'll put myself on the list for that. So it's basically your counselor that helps you. Right. And, you know, like I said, the Northwest CAP is a really good company also. There's other things that you can reach out to. We reach out to Easter Seals, you know, for housing and stuff like that. And the counselors basically help you as long as you kind of know what kind of direction you want to go into. Some people go home and then, you know, they just do meetings and stuff like that. But there's a lot of us that step down and just want to stay in the program.
Transition,
yeah.
Right.
Ernestine, our director, she really believes in helping people to make the transition as easy as possible. So that's why we do link to Northwest CAP, like Colleen said, and other services in the community that can give our clients job support, education, teaching them to write resumes, teaching them to budget, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have a life skills class taught by our intake person, Angela, and she's really creative and it's really powerful. So right now they're going over budgeting and stuff like that.
Okay.
And as we get near the end of this, one thing I'd like to mention is all the local churches that are sponsor us through this program. I can't thank you all enough, whoever's listening, because without your financial support, we wouldn't be where we are right now, because we are a nonprofit. We depend on these donations that come largely through the churches. We get state dollars also. And there's a high criteria to meet that. I mean, we get our audits a couple times a year, and all of our records have to be up to date with everything. And we did with flying colors this last year, I have to say. We passed, and if you pass the state's criteria, you're doing good.
Right.
So at any rate, thank you to all you church people out there. God bless you, and continue to remember us, especially at this holiday time, because we do need the money. We do need the funding. And anybody who wants to donate, we definitely welcome that in. And my classes are free, by the way, and they're twice a month. I do them on Saturdays. They're from 10:30 to 12:30. They're not long, but I can be reached at 908-806-4220, and my extension is 326. And you can get in touch with anybody, but it is open to the public. We just ask that you're clean, that you're not taking any drugs when you come in, and we would welcome you.
Nancy, why don't we repeat that number and also give your full name, too, for anybody who wants to reach out to you.
It's Nancy, and the last name is Wilk, W-I-L-K, and the phone number over at the Good News Home is 908-806-4220, extension 326.
Great. Is there a website also where people could find out more about you?
www.goodnewshome.org.
Goodnewshome.org. Okay.
I have to ask, is there let's say for a person who is either an addict or an alcoholic, is there screening or characteristics that stand out that the person may not recognize that they have this disease?
Well, funny you should mention it, that too, but National Geographic did a feature story for anybody who happened to look at it. The September issue is all about the science of addiction, and science has shown that there's probably a genetic gene that's being passed on from generation to generation,
right.
And once that gene gets activated, it's off to the races. So they did a really good job on that, and I define that more in my classes. I really get into the physiology of the disease.
Okay.
And according to the DSM, which is a clinical diagnostical manual that we use, The disease is characterized by tolerance, which means you need more drug to get the high than you used to. Withdrawals. There's a great deal of time used to get the drug. There's a persistent desire or unsuccessful efforts to cut down or control substance use. Important social, occupational, and recreational activities are given up or reduced because of the use, so you might miss a birthday party or an important engagement that the family has. Or you're using despite the knowledge that you have a physical problem or a psychological problem, a psychiatric problem that's made worse by the use. And all you have to do is qualify for three of these things to be diagnosed as dependent.
So basically what Deb is saying, it's compulsivity, and which is the loss of the ability to know when to stop or cannot stop, and then the obsession with the activity and the continuation of that behavior despite adverse consequences.
In the last couple minutes that we have, Debbie, could you just briefly speak about the spiritual part that you're doing now? That you know, I know it's new and I know, you know, but if you could, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, so I've only been a spiritual counselor for about 6 months. But what we do is we find that a lot of people in their addiction lose their faith. They may have gone to church once with their families, or they may have gone to a synagogue or a mosque, or but they've stepped on their values, and now they're ashamed, and now they feel like God has abandoned them, or they have resentments towards God, or their higher power as they might conceive him. And the spiritual part wants to heal that. The spiritual part wants to let them know that, hey, they're a person of worth. They've been born that way. They're a human being. They that they're entitled to a second, third, fourth, fifth, or whatever chance. Right. That there is hope, that they can change, and that they can pick up their rightful place in society again with the support and help of the church and AA, NA. That they can become a whole human being again because they have meaning and worth.
Great. And I see Colleen smiling.
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing that the Good News Home does, we go to a different church every Sunday, different. So we can figure out what kind of church we would like to join when we leave the Good News Home, because, you know, a lot of people either never been, or like Debbie said, went once or twice and, you know, hasn't really been there in years. And they find God again, and then they introduce different ones for us to choose, so which is really nice.
Well, I can't thank you folks enough. The time flew by. But I thank you, Nancy and Debbie. And Colleen, I think it's awesome that you have the courage to come here and speak about your hell that you went through, for lack of better words. But I just find it awesome that you have come and are willing to talk and have given up the addiction. Mm-hmm. You fight it every day, you know. But you're doing it, and that's what counts.
Thank you.
And I really think that's awesome that you came here.
If one person is listening and gets sober or comes to the Good News Home, it's all worth it. That's what it's all about, is a giving back. You know, I got all of this for free, all of, you know, everything, and now it's my turn to help other people. So that's what, you know.
It's ironic you say that, because people ask me all the time why I do all this, you know, why I teach the classes, why I do support groups, why I do the radio show. And my answer is what you said. If I can help one person get through it, or one family get through it, then it's all worthwhile.
It's all worth it, yeah.
And so I really thank you all for coming. Nancy, Debbie, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And folks, remember, we won't be here for the next 2 weeks because it's Christmas on next Monday and it's New Year's Day the following Monday. So if you are if you celebrate Christmas, I hope you all have a very Merry Christmas. If it's Hanukkah, have a happy Hanukkah. And I hope you all have a very wonderful, healthy, happy New Year. We'll see you in about 3 weeks. God bless.
Thank you.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, RabCoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
A college education, you don't have to go into debt before you even begin.
The actual price of a college education today could cost more than $200,000. Even if you don't qualify for financial need-based assistance, Premier College Funding can help you and your family cut college costs and find efficient ways to pay for college.
Call 908-788-3799 for a free consultation or visit us online at premiercollegefundingllc.com. Getting a college degree doesn't have to break the bank.
Hey, Big C here doing a little practicing for the Hunterdon County Chamber's 16th Annual Golf Classic. We're teeing off at Tuesday, October 3rd at Hawk Point Golf Club. The signature sponsor this year is Hunterdon Healthcare. Besides enjoying a great game of golf, this event is an excellent way for you to promote your business via our sponsorship opportunities, silent auction, and networking luncheon. The Golf Classic launches at 8:30 a.m. with registration, breakfast, and a putting warm-up. This scramble format will begin with a shotgun start at 10 a.m. Plus, we will have some exciting contests to enjoy throughout the day. Oh, yes, the winning foursome will be presented with the fabulous Hunterdon Cup. Talk about bragging rights. I got you this year, Team ExxonMobil. I'll see you on the first tee.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Two years ago, more than 500 business and political leaders came to New Jersey's first ever business summit in Atlantic City. They discussed how they could work together to solve key issues hampering our state's economic growth. And out of that summit came action. We saw taxes reduced and the trust fund for rebuilding our infrastructure fully funded once again. Many of the summit's participants came together to create Opportunity New Jersey, a coalition dedicated to making our state more competitive and more affordable. In this election year, Opportunity New Jersey wants to make sure both candidates support common sense fiscal policies that will meet these goals. That is why Opportunity New Jersey will host the 2017 Affordability Summit on Monday, September 18th at First Baptist Church of Lincoln Gardens in Somerset. Join us at this Affordability Summit and add your voice to those who want to see New Jersey move forward. To register, call Opportunity New Jersey at 609-393-6998. That's 609-393-6998. Or visit opportunitynj.org.
This message sponsored by the New Jersey State Chamber of Commerce, the New Jersey Broadcasters Association, and this station.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Tune in every Monday morning at 10 a.m. on Hunterdon Chamber Radio for Chamber in Action with Chamber President Chris Phelan and Good Morning host Big C, where we'll keep you informed on all the issues, all the initiatives of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce and our business community here in Hunterdon County.